and welcome to another episode of Visions with me, Yulili Wickham Ashby. And today I'm deeply honored and grateful to the management team of Gospel Fest, namely Adrian Agard, and the board and members of Barnard for so graciously allowing me to air a lecture presented by Dr. Gordon Cowens. Dr. Gordon Cowens, a former principal of a high school in Jamaica, pastor of the United Church in Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica to be exact, and a member of the Evangelical Disability Advocacy Network, a branch of the World Conference of Churches, and also a young man with a disability. So take a listen as he spoke to us about disability and spirituality. Take a deep breath and learn some new information around people living with disabilities and their own spirituality.
You know, marginalized people in the world are sometimes referred to as the voiceless. And perhaps there are more people who are not voiceless so much like we are not listening. This is an opportunity, I find, graciously given by the Barbados Gospel Fest, for the issues that relate to persons with disability to be brought front and center. And I'm particularly happy that members of the disability community are here with us tonight and will be able, hopefully in the time that we will spend sharing a little bit, to express some of their own feelings and their sense of how the church affects their lives as persons, some born with disabilities and others with becoming disabled through misadventure. The theme that I chose is a theme that aligns to the Gospel Fest, and I believe one significant for persons with disability and for the church and society at large. It is touching lives of persons with disability, freed to simply be. Freed to simply be. It starts on that day when Jesus passed by. You know, Jesus had and has a way of bringing a changed perspective to every situation he touches. This day, the community will be taught by Jesus a lesson in perspective. The encounter which I refer to is recorded in the Gospel according to St. John in chapter 9 and verse 1 and following. For years, this community had seen a man sitting in a particular place begging. He was blind. For them, that was what defined him. He was a blind man and a beggar. You know, it is sad how the community saw blind and beggar as synonymous. They had seen him like that, and that is no doubt how he also saw himself. For what else is there for a blind man to do but to beg? What else could he offer to his community? What skill could he employ to benefit himself and his family and his community? You know, when a community does not genuinely ask such questions, you end up with what Jesus encountered on that day. A man symbolizing the intersection of disability and uselessness. They also had another perspective on this blind man born blind. It was this. This damage, this curse, was someone's fault. It had to be, retribution for his own wrongs or those of his parents. This is the culturally acceptable position in the time. Though, you know, there is something like a tinge of ridiculousness about it. Because I wonder, what could have been the nature of the sin of this unborn child to have warranted punishment? Ever thought about it? But be that as it may, that was how the prevailing thought of the time, that was the mindset. For Jesus' disciples directly question him and they say, Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents? The question is not, is some sin involved here, Jesus? Is there some sin involved or what? The question they ask is, who sinned? This man or his parents? Their perception consigns the condition of disability to the realm of curse. And having concluded that, they further felt the liberty to claim that the bearer of the curse was liable both personally and through family line. These perceptions, some of which still unfortunately find expression in modern society, are among the dangerous perceptions which can serve to imprison persons with disability and their families. As if it is not hard enough to face limitations which can cause persons with disability to remain among the most disadvantaged and vulnerable in society, they are forced, in addition, to confront societal attitudes and behaviors which hold substantial, even insurmountable obstacles against them, obstacles to their engagement and enjoyment of life. Many people with disability are chained by society's perception of them. It is against that prevailing perspective that Jesus' answer is both swift and direct. Jesus answers his disciples and the answer is neither. His answer goes on to declare some other pertinent truths to which we shall return. But you know, let us linger for a little while longer on this sin causation question, which was that lingering perspective and to this day. There remains some cultures in which the birth of a child with a disability is considered to be a curse, with the implication that the family or some member of it has and must take responsibility for this circumstance, construed to be retribution. Children with disability, often already disadvantaged in communities, underprepared to remove barriers to their fullest enjoyment of life, are now doubly victimized when they have to grow in an atmosphere with guilt and shame. In this regard, the objective of the disability movement is liberation. Freedom. Liberation. You know, at my age, a nearly ripe old age of 70, I can still remember how at the age of 6, a complete stranger approached me on Main Street, ostensibly full of pity for this young man who had been born without a right hand, and began to tell me her convoluted version of what my mother must have done in error. I couldn't escape this interpolator fast enough. I just ran away from her. Good thing for her that my mother had taught me that manners maketh the man. So I was still attempting to be relatively polite. So let's be real. There are children who are born with birth defects or contract ailments precipitating permanent damage in the birthing process. And the records really ought to show that in some cases, responsibility rests with medical personnel, or as in the case of that drug called thalidomide in the 1950s, irresponsible pharmaceutical companies and ineffectual government agencies, the responsibility lies there. And where human error is involved, society must rise to take responsibility, including responsibility for the pollution of land and air and waterways, all of which contribute to disease and a diseased environment. As society, we do need to take cognizance of how communal behaviors and lifestyle choices can contribute to the harm of others. The Jamaicans will say, all right, we'll come again. So let's return to where Jesus is in this matter. Let's join Jesus in freeing this little boy born blind from his unwarranted guilt and shame. Let's join Jesus in this act of liberation. For Jesus' response, his full response in that particular encounter, is a call to action, a call to action among us in favor of the fullest enjoyment of life. Because you see, Jesus went on to say to his disciples and all others around who would listen, the works of God should be revealed in him. Yes, what is the purpose of the birth of this man that you think is nothing more than a beggar? Jesus says a much greater purpose is there for him. For Jesus continues, I, Jesus, must work the works of him who sent me. And then goes on to release this man of the obstacles and the barriers to the full enjoyment of life. You know, as I prepared to come here, and especially as I know that my audience is including persons with disabilities, and these days, of course, virtually, you don't know where what you say goes. This particular line I now say, I believe, is a word for every person with a disability. There is a latent work of God waiting to be revealed in you. For there is a latent work of God waiting to be revealed in every human being, including persons with disabilities. For I believe the scriptures when they say in Jeremiah 29 verse 11, I know the plan I have for you, plans for peace and not evil, to give you a future and a hope. You know, perhaps the first obstacle to be removed from the mind of each person is any self-concept that limits pursuing one's fullest potential. In the education system, and I was privileged, as you have heard, to have worked in it for over two decades. In the education system, we know so well how children with self-esteem apply their energies to achieve attainable goals. The scriptures say, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself or herself more highly than he or she ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. That's Romans chapter 12, verse 3. But where do people learn how to think appropriately about themselves if it is not in the very socialization process, the cultural practices into which they are born? Born into a society in which to be born blind is a curse, and one's only aspiration should be only to beg, ensnares you in an immovable cage of imprisonment, chained in society's perception. You know, you must be careful what you say to children, you know. Because if I am 67 now and it's some of those childhood memories that are coming back to mind. And one of the ones that came back to mind was that day when I did the homework and came first with that particular assignment in the maths class. And the math teacher berated the other 39 students with some kind of statement like, "So, all the rest of you, how could you sit down there and make Gordon get all of them maths right and you get some of them wrong?" And so clearly in this poor math teacher's mind, there was some reason why a boy who was born with a disability that have to have one less hand than she expects people to have, that he shouldn't be the one to get the maths right. Again, of course, I praise my mother for kind of teaching, because you know my tongue was a tongue that had to be held back. So I held back my tongue in politeness. But I often think about that experience and say, "So tell me something, is how much hand on to take right for a maths exam?" Which of you use both of your hands to try and get the maths right? So quite frankly, I don't think a maths brains need anything more than one hand. And in fact, if and when that boy or girl who was born without hands but had learned so well to write with her feet was a brighter maths brains than me, then she would have come first. So you know, the perception that we give and allow people, especially the youngest people among us, is part of the ensnarement that needs to be changed for God's sake. Because Jesus challenges these perceptions. Jesus heals. Jesus heals him in what I like to consider an act of obstacle removal, release, liberation. Jesus' action towards him sets this blind man free. The effect of his action was not simply to correct a mechanical fault which had precipitated the blindness, but it was significantly to confront the social perceptions which, if left in their place, would serve to imprison any future bearer of a disability, consigned to begging because his or her community cannot perceive any valuable contribution that he or she would be able to make. A community unable to perceive the gifts of persons with disabilities, a community unable to perceive of the gifts which persons with disabilities are able to bring in service to their community, is a community that lacks vision. So I wonder what's worse, a sightless man or a visionless community? Jesus' freeing of this man from the handicapping conditions which relegated him to a status of apparent permanent begging is not without controversy. And as with other previously mentioned cultural perspectives, Jesus' actions confront prevailing mindsets and demonstrates a countervailing viewpoint. Now, the religious powerhouses of the day insist on preserving their religiosity, if even at the expense of humanity. Jesus' position is different. Jesus' position confronts and challenges their warped religiosity. You know, it is unsurprising that some injustices perpetuated against the vulnerable and apparently voiceless are bolstered by ideologies which find their basis in theologies. The religious powers perhaps too often exercise authority in an uncritical way, preserving the status quo. The scribal authorities of that day would more vigorously defend the sabbatical prohibitions as they perceive them than to promote and celebrate the release of a fellow human being from the bondage of the handicapping conditions over which they had some control. So rather than celebrating the man's freedom, they get into a big cascas with Jesus about breaking the Sabbath laws. The Jesus presence brings within its wake a counter-cultural perspective. The Jesus way is a chain-releasing way every time. Some freedom movements of the past have not always had the benefit of the determined and conscientious inputs of the institutionalized church. Christians in our era must continue to labor to keep the church focused on its Christ-directed ministry and mission of bringing liberty to the captives, release to those imprisoned in circumstances often bolstered by societal norms and cultural perspectives which preserve the status quo. Some persons with disability hold the view that in too many places the church has been slow to appreciate the church's role in championing the cause of justice for persons with disability. This is a truth which I believe those of us who are church leaders need to hear. For many persons with disability have already voted with their feet. Not only have some faith communities been fully ensconced in their erroneous views of disability, which include the previously discussed perspectives of punishment for sin and of bearer of and their relatives and the sign of demonic activity requiring exorcism and all the rest of it, or as some conceive disability as being the remaining marks of a lack of faith, preventing God from miraculous healing. For others, persons with disability are seen as objects of pity. And too many church responses historically have been motivated by sympathy and compassion, and yet not sufficiently has the church in all its dispensations seeing persons with disability as citizens to be restored. Citizens to be restored to their capacity as bearers of human rights. Too many in the church still see persons with disability not as person first. And that is what the church needs to hear, we believe, today. Person with disability, person first. Yet, you know, much progress has been made and the pace is constantly being sped up. The United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability was the first United Nations Convention of the 21st century, being promulgated in 2006. Barbados, like Jamaica and some other Caribbean states, should really be proud of the sterling contributions of their emissaries who contributed so much to the convention's drafting and its eventual acceptance. In fact, Jamaica was the first state in all the world to sign and ratify the convention. The convention enshrines in an international treaty the rights of persons with disability, and it urges governments to promulgate laws which domesticate these provisions. With the passage of time, Jamaica has only in 2022, last year, gazetted the regulations by which the Disability Act 2014 takes effect. Thank God we have got to that day. The process can seem an arduous journey, but it is a pilgrimage worth taking and worth taking together. Here in Barbados, your meetings of the Law Reform Commission and your continuing work in the National Advisory Committee for Improving the Lives of Persons with Disability, that signals that your draft legislation is well underway. No doubt the experience of similar states across the Caribbean should help to inform and encourage all who work to respond to this call for justice. The work of civil society organizations like Barnard, represented here tonight, must continue with vigor. The provisions of the convention are wide-ranging and they affect all aspects of life for persons with disabilities, their families, and the communities. The World Health Organization, the WHO, estimates some 15% of the world's population will be classified as persons with disability. So that the express purpose of the convention is to promote, protect, and ensure the full and equal enjoyment of all human rights and fundamental freedoms of all persons with disabilities, and to promote respect for their inherent dignity. In adopting a social model of disability, the Convention defines disability as long-term physical, mental, intellectual, or sensory impairments, which, in interaction with various barriers, may hinder a person's full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. And then it goes on to speak of all the various areas of life in which rights are to be secured, and focuses in one of its articles on women and children with disabilities in order to secure and promote their rights wherever they may be the most vulnerable and most susceptible to discrimination and exploitation. You know, churches and Christians have contributed much to this progress. And I am privileged to stand here today representing the Ecumenical Disabilities Advocates Network, EDAN, of the World Council of Churches, and to say that it is one demonstration of the global church's commitment to advancing the lives of persons with disabilities. Formed in 1998 at the World Council of Churches Assembly in Zimbabwe, it has grown over the decades to be a global force, assuming a leadership role in the struggle against the oppression and segregation. In this capacity as agent for change, EDAN has proven that disability does not equal incapacity. Blindness does not equal begging. EDAN is a global network of persons, all with disabilities. It has initiated and engaged a discourse on disability theology in theological institutions all over the world, an action which has spurred many seminaries to include liberatory disability studies in their theological education and their ministerial formation. EDAN has led the World Council of Churches, in fact, to publish two documents on inclusion and full participation of persons with disability in all levels of the church. And I invite you to go online and to find this material. One is called A Church of All and for All.
Thank you for listening to Visions today as we listened to Dr. Gordon Cowens share his thoughts about disability and spirituality. And I want to encourage each of you to reach out and touch someone's life, especially those individuals living with disabilities. So until next week, be good. Love yourself and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Ciao.